My guess this morning is that many of you on this holiday weekend are still experiencing a little bit of a hangover from the tryptophan and all of the turkey that you indulged in over the course of the last couple of days. For me personally, yesterday I spent 10 and a half hours in a car with two toddlers, and so I am dragging a little bit as well. And so instead of just coming right out with it, I'm going to help you guys and set the ball in the tee for y'all and how we know we're kind of all in this together, and you can give me that energy push that I need this morning. So in just a second, I'm going to start with good morning, and that's your cue to respond back to me with the loudest good morning that you got. Can we do that? Good morning. All right, we are there. Hey, this morning we are so excited that you guys are with us as we finish off this series that we have been calling If Money Talk with our third and final part. And can I just say this? Man, if you're back for the second or the third time during this series, I simply want to say thank you. Thank you for coming back. If you are here for the first time ever, or maybe just the first time during this particular series, what I want to speak to you this morning is simply this. It's going to be all right. You see, I know that there's some fear that rises up inside of us, and some of y'all who are here for the very first time are like, we didn't see the Facebook post that told us what the series was going to be, and if we would have known that it was a series entitled If Money Talk, maybe we would have chosen a different day and a different series to show up in, because money rises a little bit of fear up inside of every single one of us, and it brings a little bit of uncomfortableness to the table when we start to talk about money, especially within the confines of the church. But this morning, could I just put your fear to ease a little bit? You see, what those of you who are back for a second or a third time know is this, is that this particular series is different than the rest. It isn't designed for us to get more of your money because, frankly, when Jesus talked about money, he wasn't going after your money either. You see, this is a series that's designed to help you regain control of your money, to help you begin to look at and use the finances that you've been given for the period of time in which you are on this earth in the best and the healthiest way possible as you move forward. Because what I know is this, is that as much fear as money causes for us to talk about, it also causes just as much stress in the way in which you and I tend to live in our everyday lives. And so what if throughout this series, and especially this morning, we saw this as an opportunity for us to begin taking healthy steps forward? And you may be here on the perfect weekend, because I promised you last weekend, if you were here, that today would be the most practical message of the entire series, that it would give us something tangible to grab onto and to begin to implement. And if we are capable as people of implementing into this one step into our lives right here, right now, today, then what I promise you is this, is that our lives and our finances will change in a tangible way immediately. But before we press forward, it's only fitting for us to pause and take a look back at where we've been. You see, if money could actually talk, I don't think many of us would be surprised at what money would say to us. And the reason why many of us wouldn't be surprised at what money would say is really because of this parallel. That what money would say if it could talk would be very similar to what Jesus did say when he did talk. And the reality is that we have a God who put on flesh and came to this earth, not to just to secure our eternities, but he talked about money more than he talked about heaven. He talked about money more than he talked about anything else. Why? Because he knew that in our time here on this earth, that money and stuff and possessions would be the chief competitor for our hearts, and that it would constantly, no matter how little or how much of it you have, it would constantly be grasping for control of your life. And so we said that what if we began listening to what money had to say? And if we began listening to what money had to say, we've been through these four different things in the first 2 weeks of our series already that money would tell us. And the first was simply this. This is the foundation in which everything is built on. That I, as money, can add meaning to your life, but I am not the meaning of life. I can add meaning to your life, and let's put away the preconceived notions that money in and of itself is bad. I'm not bad. In fact, I can be incredibly good in your life. But where I become bad is when you make me the meaning of your entire life. When you make me the meaning of your marriage, your family, everything that's good or happy or content about your life is centered on how much money you have or how much has been saved up in the bank. You see, because what we miss time and time again is the actual definition of meaningful. You see, we all want to live meaningful lives. We all want to have a meaningful legacy. And yet what we miss is that the actual definition of meaningful is this. It's becoming a means to a greater end. That's how our lives become meaningful, is we live as a means to a greater end. But oftentimes in making money the meaning of our lives, do you know what ultimately that does? It makes me the end. It's all about me. My money is all about me. It's spent all on me. And what if we began to see money in a completely different light? That we weren't called to be people who own our money and in turn allow our money to own us and control us. But we realized that we were simply entrusted in our time here on this earth, no matter how young or how old we are, 16, 18, 24, 36, 84 years old, that with the time that we have left, we were called to be incredible managers of what's been given to us. And the reason why I believe with all of my heart that we really were never owners in the first place and we were just great managers is this, is because the second thing we talked about in week one that money would tell us is obvious. I'll still be here when you're gone. That when you die and you fade away, you don't get to take me with you. That I'll still be here. And because of that, if you make me the meaning of life, I will simply just become something that those you love will fight about after you're gone. And yet, because our money was meant for us to be great managers, what if we began to see our money through this lens? That the right now resources we've been given have the potential to make a forever difference. And we finished week one with this question. You see, if living a meaningful life is all about being a means to an end, then the question we must answer is, to what ends do you want your life to be a means? I know it's wordy, but it's powerful. To what ends do you want your life to be a means? What end goal are you shooting at with every hour, every day, every week, and every month that you've been given? And then in week two, as money had more to say, what money told us last week was this, is that your self-control determines who gets control. Your self-control determines whether you or money gets control of your life and every decision you make and every direction that you go. And the reality that we often miss is this, is that the financial pressure we feel every single day has far less to do with how much we make and far more to do with what we do with what we make. You see, we live our lives, keeps continuing to say, if only I had more money. And our money looks back at us and says, if only you had more self-control. You see, we've been called to live the best life possible by taking back control and having self-control when it comes to our finances instead of relinquishing control to money in our lives. By telling money where it should go so that money understands it ain't running the show. I am. That's the job that I have been given. And when we do that, here's the crazy part, y'all. We become people who are capable of no longer living like this with the stuff we've been given. And we begin to live like this. And people and families and churches and organizations that function like this become world changers that leave a legacy that deep down we all desire to leave. But the good news is that money ain't done talking yet. You see, today we finish this series by focusing in on this one ridiculously simple thing that money wants to say to you and to I. But there's this correlation. Do you know that science proves that the human body finds it much easier to keep itself warm than it does to get warm? Did you catch that? The science proves that the human body has a much easier time keeping itself warm than trying to get warm. And if you've grown up in this region of the country for any amount of time, you know that around October, early November, the weather really begins to shift in a major way. And it just so happens that that shift in weather coincides with something that has been very special around here, especially in Shelby. And that is, it's postseason time, especially for our football team, our cross-country teams. And one of the things that I absolutely love being able to do is to go out to football games and cross-country meets. I love winter more than anything else. I'm a basketball guy at heart, and being able to support students and families right here in our city, right here in our community. But as the weather begins to shift, and over the last several years, as we've made it into the football playoffs, and I've traveled around, and you go out, and all of a sudden, it's not like 65 degrees like it was in late August, early September, but it's like 35 degrees when the sun goes down in your late November nights. I had this sort of scheme that I built up and how I was going to stay warm and traveling to all of these different games, and that was this. That I would start with my base layer, and I would take all of these layers with me. And then as I got cold, I would stay warm for as long as I could, and as I got cold, then I would add a layer. And then when I got cold in that one, I would add a layer, and I'd add a layer, and I'd add a layer to that. And somehow, every single time, I just thought it was just too darn cold for the layers that I brought, but my body failed every time at being warm when I took that approach. And this is why. Because our body, when it begins to get cold and it's trying to get warm again, it goes into overdrive. It's a scientific fact that it begins working twice as hard to try to produce heat within our body. And you know what actually happens? Like many of us, when we start to get cold, we think we're cold because our hands or our feet, our extremities are cold, and that's what's causing us to be cold. But it's not actually that at all. Do you know when your extremities begin to get cold, it's actually your central nervous system sensing that your body is cold? And your central nervous system has one ultimate task, and that's this: to protect your vital organs. And so in sensing that you're cold and in trying to keep you alive in the cold as long as it can, do you know what the central nervous system does? It begins to retract the blood vessels from the extremities of your body and call everything back to the middle. In doing that, it's attempting to protect your heart and protect all of the organs that are most vital for you to survive as it thinks you're about to freeze to death. And so our body works twice as hard in a way that's unnatural for it. Where if I, going to the football games or the cross-country meets, just would have started with 40 layers on and been sweating from the very beginning, my body would have found it much easier to stay warm than to try to play catch-up. And here's the correlation. Do you realize that the exact same thing is true when it comes to our money? You see, if money could talk, the fifth thing that it would say to you and I that caps off this series is simply this: I'm easy to keep up with, but I'm difficult to catch up with. I'm easy to keep up with, but I'm difficult to catch up with. You see, if we're constantly keeping up with our finances, everything in our financial world operates naturally. Just like our body operates naturally when it's simply just trying to stay warm. But where things become unnatural is when we start to try to play catch up when it comes to our finances. Things get all out of whack, and that's when the stress begins to set in. That's when the panic begins to strain our marriage. That's when we fall further and further behind because we're doing everything possible to try to dig us out of this giant financial hole or the credit card debt that we've fallen into. You see, if we don't keep up with our money, we will constantly be playing catch up. And for those of you who have found yourself at one season of life or another trying to play catch up in your finances, you know, right? That is a ridiculously uncomfortable place to be. Am I right? It is no fun trying to catch up and trying to make things right after they have been made drastically wrong by decision after decision after decision in your early 20s or your early 30s or your time before kids or your time with young kids when everything was just about being salvaged by the plastic in your back pocket. You see, we are called to be people who are great at keeping track because then we function more naturally. And let's just be honest for a second. In talking about keeping up with our money, You see, it really boils down to us knowing where our money is going. And the fact of the matter is this, no matter who we are, no matter how little or how much we have, the hard truth is that none of us have an excuse for not knowing where our money is going. We don't have an excuse. Why? Well, because this is how it works. Every single month, you are allotted a specific amount of money in your paycheck. For many of us, that amount of money stays relatively the same. And as we are allotted that amount of money and that money comes in, then what happens is this. We decide where the money goes out. I spend my money. Nobody else spends it. And because of that, I should be knowing where my money is going. I should be capable of keeping track. And maybe for all of us in our minds here in this room or watching online, man, we just need to repeat this to ourselves a couple of times to let that sink in. I should be knowing where my money is going. I should be knowing where my money is going. You see, every single one of us should take up this practice. Why? Why is this so important? Because ultimately, when we lose track, we lose control. Hello. Y'all okay? When you lose track of where your money is going, ultimately you begin to lose control. Uncertainty with your money and your finances always causes us to lose the control of our peace of mind. Am I right? We've been there before. If you've spent any amount of time managing your own finances, what you know is that uncertainty when it comes to your money, one of the first things to go is your peace of mind. Uncertainty with our finances and with our money causes us to lose control of our trust in our spouse. And as soon as the money runs short or we find ourselves spiraling out of control deeper and deeper into a financial hole we didn't want to be in, you know what we begin to do? We begin to question the person laying in bed next to us, and they must be the culprit of why we're in financial trouble. And we begin to question why they're spending so much on the boat, or why she's spending so much on the next pair of shoes, or why there's so much coming out of the budget every single month to go out for wings with the buddies or coffee every morning. Uncertainty with our finances causes us to lose control of our trust in the people we love most. Uncertainty with our finances ultimately causes us to lose control of our spending habits. We don't really know what's there or how much is left, and so we just spend, spend, spend. And the get-out-of-jail-free card is that the plastic will always be there to rescue us. But the reality is that in order for us to gain back control, the one thing that every single one of us needs, and this is where it begins to get ridiculously practical, we need a plan. And for many of you, where your mind is going is you're like, here we go, he's going to start talking about a budget. Nope. It's better than that. You see, here's what I know about a budget, y'all, when I grew up in the school of Dave Ramsey. I know that a budget is the ideal. And as an adult or a young adult or an older student, what many of us know in our lives when we look close enough and get honest enough is that the ideal and the reality rarely match up with each other. Do you know what a budget is? It's a fancy multicolored spreadsheet that stays in the same place all the time. You keep it in the same file in the top drawer of your desk. And years ago, you created that budget because it was the ideal that exactly $800 was supposed to go here and exactly $750 was supposed to go here. And that's how we make it work every single month. But the reality is we know that our lives and the reality of our lives don't play out in that exactness. And so it's about more than a budget. No. The practical step we need to take is to simply track our money. To keep track of every single dollar and every single cent that we spend. We start to look at exactly where we're sending our money out every single time it goes out. And as I was preparing for this message, it was a journey back in time for me a little bit. 11 years ago, Krista and I got married, and we were straight classified as dirt poor. We were living off of one associate pastor's salary. She was still a full-time college student. We picked a place right in the middle. She was driving an hour each way, every single day to school, and I was driving a half hour every single day to my job. And you thought gas was bad now. Rewind back to 2010. We were scraping $4 a gallon. Our monthly expenses in gas was over $400 a month as a newlywed couple. And we made the determination at that point, if we're going to make it and keep the heat on in the middle of the winter, like, we have to know where every cent is going every single month. And we have to be conscious of everything that we're spending and making sure that it's going to the right place and making sure that we can keep up on our rent and making sure that we have enough to do the things that we know we've been called to do. And as we went through this process, and I'll be honest with you all, going through this process and knowing the value of tracking your money has been an absolute roller coaster for Krista and I. And here's why it's been a roller coaster, and maybe some of y'all can relate to this. Is because in the seasons of life in which we started to get comfortable, you know, we got two paychecks or we both got raises in our lives, it was like, okay, it's not that necessary anymore for us to keep track. We got way more excess than what we have ever had or what we know what to do with, so it'll just all work out and we don't have to worry about keeping the lights on. And then we'd hit a tight spot and it's like, you lost track of the habit, you better get back into the habit, you better sync back up, and you get the app and you go in, and every single time someone makes a purchase, guess what? Some of y'all are going to be wigged out by this. My wife sees it when I spend it because it comes up on the app, and then I have to say exactly what was spent there and vice versa. And we're accountable to each other to make sure that every dollar and every cent is accounted for. And in those seasons of our lives, what we began to learn every single time was this, and this is so healthy, y'all. I told you it was going to be practical. What we began to learn was this. Is that in our lives, when it comes to our money, when you know you're going to log it, you're more inclined to hog it. Okay, some of y'all are taking notes and you're like, this does not match up. Because I realized in my ability to rhyme, this might not have been the message that I wanted to send. Like, it makes sense, but hog it just sounds so bad. And so when you've had too much turkey and you're just laying around and you're trying to make rhymes in your sermon, I figured maybe this was a little bit better at what I wanted y'all to take home with you. You see, what we really begin to learn is this, is when you know you're going to record it, you're more inclined to consider whether you can afford it. When you know you're going to have to record it, you're more inclined to consider whether or not you can afford it. And for those of us who are having the difficulty making the correlation of this truth to our money, maybe think of it this way. And I know coming off the back end of Thanksgiving, this is a question, y'all, that I am not asking you to raise your hand for, all right? Hear it first here. I did not ask you to raise your hand for this. How many of y'all have ever partaken in one of those calorie or food tracker apps? Think about it in your mind, right? Yeah. Many of us have done that. And what you know is that when you start on this program where everything you put into your mouth gets put down onto this app and it keeps track, this is how many calories you have left now. This is how many calories you have left now. After you ate that cookie monster from Cheddar's, this is how many you got left. You're now in the negative from one cookie monster. This one question comes into your mind time and time again. And that question is this, is it worth it? Is it worth it to stick that into my mouth right now? Or should I refrain from doing that and save up for something better later? Right? We've all lived there before. Like, I don't know that I want to waste the remaining calories I have left on the first meal and then I can't eat for the rest of the day. I think I'll put the quadruple stack of pancakes to the side. I'll enjoy the fruit and yogurt parfait. That way I can have lunch and I can have dinner today. Is it worth it? And the reality is that if we were to do the same thing with our money, we would be forced to ask that exact same question. Is spending on that thing right now worth it? Or should I save for something that I know is much more important later? Because guess what? This is all the calories. This is all the dollars we've got left this month. And we're not going into credit card debt. We're not paying 27.99% interest just so that we can indulge in this thing now. And so we track our money. And we know that if we're going to record it, we're more inclined to consider whether we can afford it. And much like our food, when we track our calories, you're not just taking control of your food when you do that. You're also taking control of your physical health. And when we begin to do this one ridiculously practical step with our money, you're not just taking control of your money. You're taking control of your mental health. You're taking control of your emotional health. You're taking control of some of those unnecessary fights within your marriage. Yes, you're even taking back control of your spiritual health. There's a reason that Jesus talked about money so much, because he knew every single day money's coming after your heart and it's coming after mine. And the way in which we said, money, get out of here, you're not in control anymore, is I'm going to track exactly where I'm spending you. And I'm going to look at it. And I'm going to assess it. And then we're going to adjust. Because I personally, or we as a couple, now realize we are spending way too much in this area, and we need to cut it back. And see, y'all, here's the good news. For those of you in this room who find yourself in a season of life in which finances are tight, this one practice actually takes the pressure off in the seasons where you're financially tight. Why? Because it takes the guesswork out of it. There's no pressure. You know exactly where every dime of your money is going, and then you don't have to guess at like, well, do we cut back over here? We've only been spending $3 a month over here, but maybe we cut back over there. No, you know where every single dollar is going, and now you can look at it and you can tangibly say, okay, we've been spending $575 on coffee every single month, and maybe that's an area that we could trim it back just a little bit. Maybe we could adjust, and now it sits right in front of you. And not only that, but this practice prepares you for financially tight seasons. And guess what, y'all? We never know when that's coming. Doom and gloom. We never know when 2008 is wrapping right back around, and we could be in a financial tight spot. And this prepares us for that. Krista and I just recently, we've been praying and thinking about this question, like, what's God calling us to in this place, in this city, within our jobs? And I'm not going anywhere, y'all. You're stuck with me. But as a family, man, what does it look like if we have to cut back here? We take a little bit less there. We do a little bit more here. And we've said, in order for us to know that we can do that if things get tighter, we have to be diligent right now about tracking our money. And then as we approach that, now we start to step it down. And we're going to get ourselves to the new line that we have to be at. The bad news, for those of us in this room who find ourselves in a season of financial margin, this practice actually puts the pressure on. Why? Well, because this practice gives you a clear picture of when your finances rise, do our lives just become more and more about me? Your spending accurately reflects that every single time. And this practice allows us to see distinctly my life and my money as we make more. Does it just become more and more about me? Have I put myself in the position in which we as a family are the ends? We're the end goal. Everything is about us. And the end goal we're shooting for is accumulation and consumption and upgrades and fashion forward and a house full of stuff. Or do we want something better than that? Do we want to leave a greater legacy than that? You see, this is what we are being called to. Why? Because Jesus knows, as humanity, this is our tendency as money continues to grasp for control in our life. That as we get more, our tendency is to store up more for ourselves, more for ourselves, more for ourselves. In one of those places that Jesus tells a story about money in Matthew chapter 6, verse 19, he gives us this advice for our tendency as humanity. He says, don't store up treasures here on earth where moths eat them and rust destroys them, and where thieves break in and steal. Basically, this is Jesus saying, you will never take what you make with you. It will always evaporate if you store up all of your treasures to be used here for yourself on this earth. Don't store up treasures here on earth. But that's what I want to do. And Jesus doesn't just stop there. You see, he doubles down, and in Luke chapter 12, he tells this story about a man who stumbled into incredible wealth. And upon stumbling into incredible wealth with his crop, he looks at his barns that are already full of grain, and he asks himself the question, what shall I do now? I have more than I could ever need. And he makes this decision with the wealth that he has. I know what I'll do. I'll tear down the barns that I already have that are already full of the grain that I need, and I'll build bigger barns. That way, I can eat, sleep, drink, be merry, and do nothing with the rest of my life. Won't it be so great? You see, deep down, for some reason, that's a pull in every one of our hearts. What if I just stored up more for me? That way I could relax just a little bit more. What if it became more about me so I felt just a little bit safer? And there's nothing wrong with making wise decisions, but tracking our money allows us to see, is it really just about wise decisions or is it really just about me? See, so here is what I believe with all of my heart, that as Christ followers, we can't allow ourselves to slip into this habit. We have to be better than that. We have to leave a greater legacy than that. And so in order to do that, I want to challenge you to something. I want to challenge you to this. For the next 2 months, I want you individually, if you're single, or you together, if you're married, I want you to start the practice for 2 months of tracking every dollar that you spend. Just 2 months to try it and to know where your money is going. To write it down and look at it and assess it and then adjust accordingly. And you might be saying, well, Ben, how do we do that? Here's the good news. There is like a couple dozen apps out there. It's what Krista and I started doing several years ago. We found an app called Good Budget. It was 100% free. And it allowed us to put our banking accounts, our credit cards, our debit cards, all into this app. And then every time a dollar was spent, it would pop up. Hey, you just spent $570 here. You need to code where that goes. And so you'd have to write a description in there and then what account that was being coded to. And then it would give you this running total, this graph of, okay, here's how much you've spent in this area. Here's how much you spent in this area. And I could see what Krista was doing and she could see what I was doing. And there's every dollar plus. Dave Ramsey puts this out there, if you're a Dave Ramsey follower, where you can do the exact same thing. Man, you can Google and find dozens of different apps out there, dozens of different tools that'll help you begin to do this individually or as a couple, just for the next 2 months in your life. And I know, I can already hear the pushback. Some of y'all are like, well, Ben, I just put everything on a credit card. And so every month the statement comes back and I can see where everything is going. Knowing you can know is not the same as knowing. Hello. Knowing you can know is not the same as knowing. And y'all, come on, it's simple. Just 2 months, just try. And if it doesn't work, then you've got freedom to quit. But there's no excuse for not knowing where your money's going. And I believe with all of my heart in this parallel between what money would say if it could talk and what Jesus did say when he did talk, that Jesus would want us to begin to take these practical steps in our life so that we could begin to push the chief competitor for our hearts out of our lives. So that we could take back the control of the things in our life that we were always meant to have control of and not allow to control us. But I get it. Here's the problem we keep dancing around week after week after week in this series. The problem is simply this, is that for many of us, we find it ridiculously easy to trust God with things like our eternity. As Christ followers, we cling to verses like what John wrote in chapter 3, when Jesus said, "For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but will have eternal life." We find it easy to give God control of our eternities in that way and to believe, God loved me so much, he was willing to put on flesh and come to earth and endure a brutal beating and being hung up on a cross and dying death and being subject to all of my sin for my eternity. We find ourselves being capable of entrusting God with our job struggles. And God, I don't like where I'm at. Would you bring a better job along? Or would you help my boss to like me just a little bit more? Would you make things a little bit easier in my job? Or I want to be home with my kids a little bit more, and so I need to find a different job. Would you open up the right door there? We find it easy to hand over control to God of our prodigal children. And we got a 25-year-old that's making decisions not the way we raised them. And they've wandered away. It's like, God, could you just help them? Could you just draw their hearts back? Could you just make a change in their life, make it clear that they're not going the right way? Man, we find it easy to give our health scares to God. God, I don't know what this lump is. I don't know what this scan really means. I mean, will you come in the middle of this? Would you take this away? Would you bring healing into my life? We even trust God with things like our singleness. Like, God, I'm 25, I'm 27, I'm tired of being the groomsman and never the groom, or the bridesmaid and never the bride. Like, I'm just looking for this guy with these 27 characteristics. Could you just drop him in front of me real quick? We believe God so loved us that he would handle all of those things for us, and yet somewhere along the way, we become people who struggle to believe that God loved us enough to hand over control of our money. Hello. And maybe for many of us, the hang-up is simply this. Many of those things that I just talked about are things that we don't tangibly hold in our hands, or we feel like we don't have a whole lot of control over. And so it's like, well, if I don't have control, all right, God, you're my last resort. Go ahead, whatever you can do. Give it your best shot. But money isn't like that, is it? Like, money we can see. Money we can feel. Money we feel like we're in control of, or at least can be controlling of. And so because of that, we struggle to believe that the God of the universe, who would send his only Son to take care of our eternities and take the worst of the worst upon himself for me when I didn't deserve it, can't be trusted with my money? All I can say is, come on, Ben Carver, are you serious? That doesn't make sense. That's illogical. Man, the God of the universe who would do that for me should most definitely be able to be trusted with my stuff. Maybe the question that changes everything is really this. Do I really own it? Is money really mine? Or is there a part of this picture that I've been missing all along? Was I not put on this earth to actually be the owner of money, but something drastically different? See, there's a story that Jesus tells in Matthew chapter 25. And the story talks about this rich ruler who prepares to go on a trip. As he's getting ready to leave, he gets this bright idea. Instead of leaving my wealth unattended here behind, I'll pick three of my servants and I'll give my wealth to them. And I'll allow them to manage my wealth while I'm gone. And so he goes to servant number one and he gives him 5 talents. And he goes to servant number two and he gives him 2 talents. And he goes to servant number three and he gives him 1 talent. And the story begins like this. And I'm not going to read it all for you, but just so that you know, I'm setting the table accurately. Jesus says this in one of his parables. Again, the kingdom of heaven can be illustrated by the story of a man going on a long trip. He called together his servants and entrusted his money to them while he was gone. And if you know the rest of the story, it goes something like this. Servant number one, servant number two, they put their money to work. They track their money, they invest their money, and they multiply their money. Servant number three, out of fear, buries his money. But ultimately, the story ends in this way. The master returns from his trip to see an account of his money. And as I read this story again in preparation for this series, I looked at this story and I was like, Ben, you are such an idiot. You know, I've looked at the bottom line of this story as it's always about, it's not how much you get, it's what you do with what you have. That's the bottom line of all of this. And what I've missed in this time and time again is this one ridiculous truth that puts me back at the right foundation. And that's this, that in this story, how much of the money was the master's? 100%. How much of the money was the servant's? It was always 0%. They were never the owners. They were just given an opportunity to be great managers with the wealth they had been given. And the same is true of you and I. You see, you rarely hear me talk about the tithe around here. For those of you who have grown up in church, you've probably heard that a couple thousand times. But Ben, why don't you talk about it? The reason that I don't talk about it a lot is because I believe that talking about the tithe can oftentimes give this misperception. That the money is mine, and out of the goodness of my heart, I have now chosen to give 10% of what is mine back to God. It was never yours, Ben. Don't fool yourself. And while we're on that topic, let's just go to guilt. Because guilt is oftentimes what the church uses to talk about money. And can I just say this? You should never feel guilty when it comes to money. You should never feel guilted into giving the church or into giving God more money. Why? Because money managers don't feel guilty. No. It's far better than that. Money managers feel responsible and accountable. For how much? All of it. Every dime they've been entrusted, they feel this sense of responsibility. Not, rewind, to be knowing where my money is going, to be knowing where the master's money is going. That's why we track it. That's why we assess it. That's why we adjust. Because what it all boils down to is this. How I manage my money says an awful lot about who and whose I am. How we manage our money says an awful lot about who and whose we are. And we've all experienced this as we've encountered generous people in our life, right? Like many of us have encountered people who are generous, who fall on all different levels of the wealth spectrum. Like those who have little, those who have middle, those who have much. And yet when we encounter them being irrationally generous, like we've encountered the people, right, who don't have a whole lot, and they're like lugging in 47 boxes of cereal for Generosity Month. And you're like, wait, that doesn't make sense. You should be using those 47 boxes of cereal to eat in your own family this month, this year. But what we automatically derive from that encounter is this. There is something different about those people. Those people are the real deal, and I don't know anything about their prayer life. I don't know anything about their church attendance, but the way in which they manage their money tells me something about who and whose they are. That their life is more focused on being a means to an end than it is being the end. And you see, the same is true of you and I. And the good news is that if we start just paying attention, what I promise you is this. You will live better. But it doesn't stop there. You will love better the family, the city, the world around you. You will live with far less fear. And who wouldn't take a little bit of that in the season of our world that we're living in? And you will live with far more purpose. See, what I believe with all of my heart is that the money you have, no matter how little or how much it is, has the potential to change the world. And if that's true, shouldn't we be intentional about tracking where something with that much power is actually going? We have an opportunity to become a means to a greater end. But to do that, we have to be people who take the simple step of knowing where the money is going. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, we thank you and for being a God who first and foremost loved us enough to send your only son and put his life on the line for our lives and our eternities. God, we thank you for also being a God who wasn't after our money. You were a God who was about keeping our money away from our heart. So God, as we finish this series, may we be courageous enough just to take the simple step for 2 months of just tracking our money individually or together with our spouse, to begin moving back in the right direction, to be able to, in the seasons of margin, answer the question, is my life just about me? Or is there a greater end that me or my family is shooting towards? God, we want to be world changers. We want to leave a legacy. But sometimes doing that means we have to take some practical, tangible steps, make some difficult decisions. God, we want to be people who do that. It's in your name that I pray. Amen.